You can have it all. Great pay, awesome benefits, a flexible schedule, the chance to grow. At Cox, we're recruiting auto and diesel technicians to join our Manheim and Fleet Services teams. If you're ready for a new job and want to experience an award-winning workplace, drive your career forward with us. Visit cox.career/autotech to learn more. That's cox.career/autotech.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the discussion of the offense with my friend Jeremy Kahn. Jeremy, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. And we got a lot of fun discussion in that first episode of the offense against the Bears, by the way, if in case you're wondering or you're listening to this much later. But there's good stuff in there. And a lot of it was about the recent taint of gambling that we've had with the basketball scandal. And it doesn't matter that it's really on court or they're cheating their own friends at poker. I guess it does matter. It's probably only 97% is bad that they're cheating for their own friends at poker, that they're shaving points in a game.
Rough stuff there, man. It was just crazy. You want to get in the offensive line?
Yeah, we can. A couple more things from the first.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm jumping ahead.
We talked a little bit about Lamar, what some penalties might be. I personally think it's going to be a fine. I think if you looked at the Mike Tomlin sideline blockage and compared that to the Lamar injury report, the Mike Tomlin sideline blockage is a lot worse, and that was a $500,000 fine. I think that puts an absolute cap on what the Ravens should expect as a penalty from this. I think it actually will be less than that. We talked about Tyler Huntley's big day. Was it the greatest performance ever by a Ravens backup quarterback? We have three nominations for you. Take a listen. See which one of those three you like. Leave me a comment about that, either with the article or send me a DM directly on Twitter with that. I'd love to hear from you.
Now we do the offensive line. Because, Ken, you know, yeah, because I want to throw all the names at you. I've told you, this is your baby. you can grade these guys and break them down. But what about Ronnie Stanley after the last three games' performances?
You know, big relief to see Ronnie out there again and playing well. First of all, he played the whole game. And so he played two of the last three games, but didn't finish. And in both of the games, they didn't finish. His ankle was not right, and he did not play well at all. In fact, he scored 4 points on 36 scored blocks in the last three games. So that's a 10 or 11 score over those three games before any kind of adjustment. But obviously, you know, 50 points short, roughly of a D. So it's not an acceptable level of play. But he came back and he had a solid game. I had him for three pressures. I did look on PFF. They had him for none. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back and review each of those three pressures. But I know definitionally we have some differences, because if his legs get in the cone where Huntley can no longer step into his throw confidently, then that's a pressure as I define it. PFF, I know they're more lenient in terms of pressures allowed in that category. Had him for seven missed blocks. Also, he did have a false start. That was a unfortunate. Scored 40 points overall with adjustment. His play was at the C level. And by the way, I probably at this point, if they said Ronnie Stanley would play it this way for the whole season, I'd probably take it. If they said for this game, saying he would get this, I would like give a large sum of money in exchange for that being the the result. Five level two blocks, two pancakes, one out of two on poles, and three nice highlight blocks. The one highlight block I really love from this game, Jeremy, on Huntley's 11-yard run, which was the next to last real offensive play the Ravens ran. They had a 2-yard touchdown run by Derrick Henry immediately after. He got out and he manipulated Odiyingbo on the left edge in a way that is very Ronnie Stanley. Like, it takes mobility to do it, but it also takes an ability to know what you're showing to your opponent and then when to turn him back to the inside. Did a great job with it. And that was it was really the only block, but it was definitely the key block on that Huntley run.
And on the false start too, wasn't that, it was almost like going three. They were trying to set him up and get him to jump off sides. And I think Stanley got a little bit too quick in the second one, right? Is that what happened?
I actually I don't know. Now I'll have to look back at that play.
I'm almost positive that's what happened, that they were trying to draw him off sides. But what about Voorhees? How did he look in the game to you?
Well, you know, another game where I've got it a little bit different than PFF, but that's okay. 58 plays, 51 blocks, 5 missed. I have him for only half a pressure, but 2/3 of the sack. Now that, let's see, the sack that occurred, he got bowled by 50. That's Grady Jarrett right into Huntley. Now that it didn't end up being Grady Jarrett who got the sack, but he got 2/3 of the sack. The other 1/3 went to Rosengarten, who let the pocket get phone boothed on the play. I actually thought his overall game, I'm really trying to figure out why PFF hated him so much. I've got to talk to them probably and see, maybe they've got another play where they've got a pressure and I should look at it again. But I thought it was a B-minus game. I actually took one of his pressures off the board when I relooked at the All-22. And I thought he really had a pretty fine game in aggregate. Certainly, Voorhees has been playing pretty well. 4 of his last 5 games has been at a B-minus level or better. He's earned a lot of leash for me. 5 level 2 blocks in this game, made all 5 of his pulls. I mean, one of the things, the Ravens guards don't have a whole heck of a lot of mobility, and we see that pretty regularly from Fa'alele, but Voorhees has been pretty good in terms of his pulls lately. Also had 2 nice highlight box, both combinations. Just a good game, I thought, from him. I've got to get to PFF and really get them to tell me where they have downgraded him significantly for his pass blocking.
Well, I got to get to a guy that I know we've been a little disappointed in how he's played, but he had a good grade coming out of this game, Tyler Linderbaum.
Yeah, so Tyler Linderbaum's had a terrible pass blocking year, the worst of his career, and he was bad as a rookie, but he's worse this year. Some of it is the quality of opponents that he's faced early in the season, some bigger guys and whatnot, but some of it is just he's not having a very good year. I think there's a lot of people out there who want to blame the guards next to him, but both of them are pass blocking at an adequate level. It's him that's the problem. So it's hard for me to say that, you know, he's suffered. I'm sure anybody who wants to go in clips, you can find clips that'll support whatever narrative you want. And that's part of the problem with not being holistic and not going through every single offensive line play. It's very much a hits per at bat profession, offensive line play. We don't judge Shohei Ohtani by his longest home run, although they're pretty. We judge him by how often. And yep. That's what's important. So with Linderbaum, this game was the game we'd been waiting for. The only half a pressure that was on a game. They didn't blow the stunt. They actually picked up the stunt just fine. But then both of them got pulled back into the quarterback. So it was a weird kind of a situation. And they that was him and Voorhees. He missed 6 other blocks. I did have that in front of me. It was how many were losses at the line of scrimmage. But I think it was only 2 were losses at the line of scrimmage in his case. So really good game for him. A-minus, 6 level 2 blocks, 3 pancakes, 1 out of 2 on pulls, 1 nice highlight combination block. So it was really good to see Linderbaum come back with a game like this after the season he's had. And he's one of the guys that I think you could realistically on offense say could play at a lot higher level than he has so far this year.
All right, well, let's talk about a guy that, I mean, we never talk about him on radio. Fa'alele, how did he perform in Sunday's game?
Yeah, so not terrible. Daniel actually had a pretty good game. 58 plays, 52 blocks. He looked really bad on one pull where he whiffed. The play still went for 10 yards on the run. Actually, for a while, I looked at it about 4 or 5 times. I was trying to determine if the defender actually veered away from Fa'alele's path to go into the backfield to avoid him, in which case I would have given him credit for the block. But in the end, I decided, no, that's a P0, as I would put it, a pull to end with no block. And so he didn't get credit for that one. That was 1 of 4 missed blocks he had in the game. He allowed 1 pressure, 2/3 of a quarterback hit, where he really got bowled back, flushed Huntley from the pocket. Huntley then should have gotten rid of a football quickly, but a defensive back came up and delivered a quarterback hit before he could do it. So that last third is on Huntley, but he certainly allowed the pressure on that play, which is the same -2 score. So 48 points, a .83 overall with a 2-point adjustment, which is small, but he didn't do a whole lot to earn a bigger adjustment. He got a B for the game. I did have 1 level 2 block, 1 pancake. Went 2 out of 3 on polls. He missed the one I told you about. Did not have a highlight in the game. So honestly, what are the calls like on Fa'alele this week? Are people really complaining about it again?
No, I mean, but it just gets the old tired thing. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what the numbers say. My eyes tell me he's terrible. And I mean, I don't want to make some bad analogy, but you think about it, like being good at your job, but completely screwing up one day a week, right? Like I'm amazing 6 days a week and I suck on that one. And that's what people see, because like when you talk about whiffing, it does look bad at times, right? When he has a bad play, but overall, according to your grades in PFF, he's been fine this year.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, the one bad day out of six thing, it actually is fine for an offensive lineman. There's tremendous variation day to day. It's not fine if you're an air traffic controller, but you can't apply an air traffic controller standard to an offensive lineman. That's the problem. Falele, you want clips of Falele looking oafish and slow? There's plenty of them out there, because it's a big component of the concessions the Ravens make to get a good pass blocker on the field. And, you know, he's that, and he's really doing it at a high level. And honestly, he's going to get paid by somebody. This is the funny thing. I mean, the Ravens are going to get a decent comp pick because he's going to get a pretty good contract from somebody after the year he's having.
I think the fans are going to be happy until they see the replacement.
Yes. So, that's exactly what will happen.
All right. What about the far end? Let's talk about Rosengarten. How's he looked?
Yeah, real solid game again from Rosengarten, and he's been a little bit up and down this year, but this was a good one. 58 plays, 51 blocks, missed five. One half of penetration he allowed, that he got stood up on a run play that was right. It was near the goal line, and they got stopped for a 1 yard loss on the play. But half of it was him, and half of it I thought was Kolar. So I split it that way. I gave up one third of the sack they allowed early on. One of the sacks, by the way, was just Huntley running around for too long. He had ample time and space. I didn't have ample time and space. But he ran around for too long and didn't get rid of the ball. But that was one third of that sack was on Rosengarten. So A minus overall with adjust. He had five blocks in level two, one pancake, three out of three on poles, and one highlight block. That was I believe a highlight combination. So a really good game for the offensive line. I mean, C, B minus, A minus, B, A minus. There hasn't been a game like that for the Ravens offensive line this year. So if you're looking for how can it be better, they had a great game blocking. They're getting Lamar Jackson back. Mitchell doesn't even need blockers. It's a fine job. And it was interesting because the Bears still schemed up some pressure. They got in the backfield. Huntley didn't have a really great opportunity set, but I would say not too much of that was on the offensive line in this game. The offensive line played very well.
Yeah, overall, I mean, it felt like a good game. You're coming away with a win. Now the key is to just keep staying healthy, right?
Yeah. I'd say, I mean, it's the continuity on the line has really not been the problem, with the exception of the injury to Stanley. And I don't think there are any replacements that they're looking that are imminent. So when, you know, you probably get calls every day about when are they going to get rid of Voorhees? When are they going to get rid of Falele? You know, the problem that's been true kind of for the year until this game was that the two guys who are playing the worst are the two guys you absolutely can't replace in Stanley and Linderbaum. And, you know, there's no solution but to continue to ride this out and see if it gets better. And this game, it did. It got better.
How much does Lamar hide some of the weaknesses?
Oh, a lot. Yeah. I mean, Lamar Jackson is plasters over a lot of problems for this Ravens offensive line and has. And it's a reason why, you know, I always say the most important decision you have to make as a general manager is where you're not going to spend money. And the Ravens have not spent a lot of money on the offensive line. And it's worked out because of who Lamar Jackson is.
Yeah, I mean, he just, again, I know it gets tossed around too much, but he is a one of one.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about some individual players. We got a little bit of mailbag after this. I want to talk MVPs too. So maybe if you get ready a 3-2-1 MVP list, that would be good. And we can kind of discuss that at the end. But is there an individual player you'd like to start us off with, Jeremy?
Well, yeah. Can we start with D Hop?
Sure.
So with DeAndre Hopkins, I don't know what it is about him. I've loved watching this guy play. If anybody's heard me talk, I love wide receivers. I'm fascinated by the great route running that some of these guys have. And he's one of those players that he had an entire season where he didn't drop a ball. But it feels like in every game he has a big play. And hear me out, whether it's a touchdown or a third down conversion. And you could talk about this past week. Was it a push off or not? You talked to somebody in Chicago. Of course it was. You talked to somebody in Baltimore. Stop crying. But I wish we would have had him here sooner and we could have watched more of this and see that growth. But he's one of my favorite receivers to watch work. And I love seeing him here in Baltimore.
Yeah, he's one of the few that the Ravens have ever gotten at this advanced age that's really worked out for them. Now, Steve Smith did. And it worked out for Beckham. They got a good receiver for a year in 23, but the problem is they paid him about triple or more what they did Hopkins. And so they're still paying for it this year. So that's my problem with Beckham. Wasn't his level of play on the field was basically as expected. It was, he had actually probably above average per target performance for the year and a below average, below expected number of targets. So I had him at about 400 and some yards. And I think he finished below that. I think they didn't, the over under was about 500 and change for him, which is, their overs are always ridiculously high for yeah. I got you here. I got to ask you this. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at yardage over unders, do you have a bias to go for the under on wide receivers, particularly if they're in a situation like the Ravens have?
You know what I've done over the years? So the public loves overs. Nobody likes to bet unders. Yep. It's the most boring thing in the world. I don't want to root for you to fail. I want to root for some sort of succeeding, right? Even though it could be the defense succeeding, nobody wants to see it. I think unders have always been the way to go. Like, everything gets elevated and fans have a hard time. Like, they'll look at a number and go, oh my God, he's got to get five catches. No, he doesn't. I mean, watch the games. Like, you'll see it sometimes. The only thing I said as a lock is take Jamar Chase's over receptions now that Flacco's locked onto him. He's going to get about 25 targets a game. But, yeah, the unders are usually the way to play it. And there's so many things in your favor that can happen. Not that you're rooting for an injury, but that can happen. A blowout can happen. They can come off the field. I just think unders are routinely the smart way to go. But it's always about finding the best bet. But I would lean under in a lot of those situations.
I would, too. But – I guess I'm even more, I have this come up with people I interact with on Twitter. And first of all, I want to say unabashedly, I love you guys. I really appreciate talking with you on Twitter, but I'm always going to ask you, if you make a yardage claim for a player, break it down for me, please. Yards per target and total targets. That's really how you realize where am I making an assumption that kind of doesn't make sense.
So, Ken, there was a big thing 2 weeks ago when Quinshon Judkins had three touchdowns against the Dolphins. That was 2 weeks ago. And he was the chalk in daily fantasy, if you will. And everybody's like, oh, my God, he had a great game because he had three touchdowns. But if you honestly look at what he did in the game, it wasn't a good game. It was opportunity cost near the end zone, and he punched it in three times. So all the people, the chalk donkeys, are celebrating. Yeah, I told you. I knew it was a good play. And all the sharp guys are like, it wasn't a good – I can't argue with you right now.
Yeah. That's fantasy football and fantasy baseball, for that matter, has really changed our understanding of the sport in some very negative ways.
Absolutely.
But anyway, let's keep it moving here. I first of all, love Hopkins as well. I think he's a fine pickup. The price was right. I hope if the Ravens persist with such acquisitions that they go for ones like Hopkins that are priced right. If they want to get Odell for the price they got Hopkins, then they'd have him at the right price too. Yeah. But this was a good one. I got a lot more playing time in this game. I think he got 24 snaps, and it's up from, he's been averaging 12 or 13 snaps or something per game.
Well, it's good to see. I like I said, I love watching him work. There's some guys in this league that just have incredible footwork and the body control. I mean, he looks like a damn ballerina sometimes.
All right, I'm going to talk about Charlie Kohler because he's back on the board in terms of the touchdown. He got playing lots of snaps as a blocker, almost used exclusively that way. Kohler is very rarely split from the formation. He's almost always got his legs even and on the edge of the formation. Doesn't it? He might be a yard back, or he might be on the line of scrimmage actually, but he's a tight end in line. That he's starting as, and loves his role, or less seems to, plays hard on special teams, makes things happen. Nice to see him get a touchdown every once in a while, and especially a big one like this one.
Yeah, and it was a great play design, as we talked about before, like setting it up and seeing him get in the end zone. And for a guy, I mean, let's be honest, he's a lunch pail guy, right? For the most part, mm-hmm. Seeing him get in the end zone, you love seeing that. You're rewarding the guy for going out there and grinding with the blocking all day long. And then it's also that thought process of nobody's expecting him to be the guy you're throwing to, right?
Yeah. Well, a little bit like seeing Patrick Ricard score a touchdown on a to finish that Miami 59-10 game, for example. Yeah.
Here you go. Well, speaking of that, can we go to Pat Ricard?
Sure.
Because the thing that surprised me, and I was so excited for this, I'm telling everybody like, hey, it's going to be an integral part of the running game. And he is, but he didn't play much.
14 snaps.
Does that were you surprised, or when you watched it back, seeing the personnel, did it kind of make sense to you?
So I think the way it made sense was that they really wanted to go after the fact that the Bears had all these injured cornerbacks, and the best way to get their worst players onto the field was to not have Ricard there, because if you put on 21 personnel, it allows the Bears to go to a base defense and take their slot corner off the field. If you go to 11 personnel, they're forced into, or even a lot of 12s, they're really forced to put a third cornerback on the field to try and cover that formation. So they actually used a fair amount of 13 and 12 too, but they wanted to keep the Bears DC in the dark about whether or not they were passing or not on a buy down basis. And that really meant that you don't really want Ricard on the field as many snaps as you might normally use him.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of surprising. Like, everybody was talking about it. It's, you know, and during the bye week, fake stories get put out there, other things. You know, we're talking about video games and ping pong tables and whatnot, and just waiting for him to come back because, you know, look, it's another lunch pail guy to go along with it, and he's so good at his job.
So the news came out today. Did we talk about this before the show, or I'm sure we talked about it in the first episode, but Lamar Jackson apparently was the one who had the machines removed from the locker room. Mm-hmm.
That's the story now. Marlon Humphrey, I think, let the cat out of the bag on social media.
So, you know, you see that and you see him with the earpiece in, very engaged. And I don't remember if we talked about this already in the first episode. Don't mind if we did.
Anyway. I think we were off air when we talked about this.
Okay. But real good to see. So I think there's a lot of people out there who owe Lamar an apology in terms of them thinking that he's letting the team down or slow rolling his return or whatever it is. So anyway,
yeah, I mean, how could you expect a guy of his caliber to not want to return and try to make a run and help win games? I mean, you look at how much fun he's having when he's out there and how important he is to it. And you brought it up, like he was Snoop's biggest fan on Sunday, mm-hmm. and watching all the, you see him on the sideline pumping his fist. It's great.
Yeah. Love to see it. All right. You went with Ricard. I'm going to talk about, we talked about Keaton Mitchell a little bit already, but I'll bring him up one more time because I want to kind of set like expectations for the rest of the season for Keaton Mitchell. And I guess I'd say this. I don't think there's any question about what he proved in this game. I think that, you know, I can't believe it took them as long in 23 to figure out what they had. Because, you know, it's what, 6-7 games into the season, that Seattle game where he ran wild. But he hadn't missed any opportunities. I think he only had two touches before that Seattle game. This is a case where I really hope he's not inactive anytime the remainder of the year. If he was, it'll be because of an injury probably. I don't see a reason why they would deactivate him over Ali the rest of the year. Whatever marginal value you're getting from the snaps that Ali would play that Mitchell would not on special teams, which are basically got to take out the kickoff return snaps because those you're already getting them from Mitchell. Mm-hmm. But there's maybe another 8 snaps where he's playing some other role on special teams. Ali is, I can't believe that Ali's contribution on special teams is greater than what Mitchell brings the offense.
I never understood it. In fact, I went on a fantasy radio at the beginning of the year to kind of preview some fantasy football talk. And they said, hey, who's your sleeper? Who's the guy that nobody, what do you think? And anybody that we should stash? And I'm like, grab Keaton Mitchell. I feel like if anything happens to Derrick Henry, ultimately he's going to get the bulk of the carries. And they're like, what about Justice? I'm going back and forth about it. And then he's not even active. So they had to be going, what an idiot. But he's so explosive out there and fun to watch. And he adds a different element from that spot. You know, I don't want to take the plays away from Zay Flowers, but you clearly could do similar type stuff with Keaton as well if something did happen to Zay.
Yeah, I think that's for sure true. And your Flowers, the problem I have is that I don't want to use him on gadget plays. I don't want him in jet motion because that takes him away from his primary responsibility, which should be manipulating the safety. So you know Flowers is always going to be covered by a cornerback, and you know that the opponents really have to figure out how they're going to layer coverage on Flowers. So having him out, you know, running a route between level 2 and 3 is exactly what you want him doing, or running a vertical if that's an alternative. I don't want
you can have it all. Great pay, awesome benefits. a flexible schedule, the chance to grow. At Cox, we're recruiting auto and diesel technicians to join our Manheim and Fleet Services teams. If you're ready for a new job and want to experience an award-winning workplace, drive your career forward with us. Visit cox.career/autotech to learn more. That's cox.career/autotech.
Him being the guy who is used for misdirection. Mitchell's perfect for that. It's kind of like bluffing in poker. You're supposed to optimally bluff one third of the time in order to maximize your expectation. And this is a case where Mitchell should be running more jet motions, and sometimes he doesn't get the ball, and sometimes he does get the ball, and then it makes both Henry or Jackson running the ball out of the mesh point all that much more dangerous.
It's 100%. I couldn't have even said it any better, because we've talked about it. To be effective on the field, a player like Mitchell, a player like Zay, whoever it may be, they don't even have to touch the ball. It just has to be respected. So if you're running that jet sweep and you hand it to them, they're running with it. The next time they see that play, they think what they got. Now you fake it and you're going the other direction. There's so many different options with it. But I just hope for our sake we get to see more and more of them as the season goes along.
Yeah. I think the die is cast now. I think there would be as much as people have been whining about Harbaugh for a lot of things, some correctly and some incorrectly so far this year. I mean, there's been some behavioral things that I haven't liked about how John has acted this year.
Yeah.
But there's been other things about his in-game choices that I think some of it's been fair and some of it's been unfair. But in any case, I think if he were to suddenly bench Keaton Mitchell again, I think there would be a lot of very fair criticism and questions levied about why the hell are you doing this? Same questions have been asked, of course, about Ben Cleveland for years in terms of why isn't he a starting guard by now? But I think for whatever reason, they probably have the reasons for that. I don't know what they are, but they probably have the reasons for that. In the case of Keaton Mitchell, I think they had the wrong reasons for critiquing him.
And you know what's funny about that? So like, I'm not a Harbaugh guy. This isn't me saying he's a bad coach or anything like that. Look, he's had a ton of success in the league. But I often believe that at some point messages can grow stale and it's time for new blood. But on the flip side of that, I like what the Steelers and Ravens have done, giving a guy an opportunity to prove that he can bring it back and have something happen. But it's been 13 years since the Super Bowl, and now we're in a situation where he's going to get ultimately scrutinized. The one thing I try to do is not make it personal. You don't want it to be that, but you also have to give credit where credit's due. And the thing that I keep saying is, for all the people that are killing him when they're 1-5, if he makes the run to the playoffs, he deserves a good bit of credit with that.
Of course.
Yes.
And I don't want to beat on Rob too much, cause he's not here to defend himself. But that's one thing he said to me on air was, if the Ravens make the playoffs, Harbaugh's not going to have anything to do with it. I don't know how he could avoid having something to do with it if that were true.
He has to be a part of it, because like you can't sit here, you can't talk about all the negative things that go wrong and not give him any credit for the positive things. And you'd be naive to think he hasn't done a lot of positive things here. I do, me personally, doing this long enough, I don't like, if you played me three words from Harbaugh, I can tell you if they won or lost. That's all you have to play me, the different emotions he has after a game, because he is a surly son of a, after losses, man.
That's absolutely true. I mean, I think that by the next day he composes himself and he knows how he has to conduct a Monday interview. But there's two things that can get him really upset. At camp, he's at the podium day after day after day, and he gets the same questions a lot, oftentimes injury-related questions, oftentimes from the same people who will ask those questions. There was a time, and Jerry is a good guy, but Jerry, former morning show guy, was a guy who would ask injury questions, and he didn't really seem to care what Harbaugh thought about him years ago. And I used to stand next to him during these interviews a lot of the time, and I just feel like I was getting vitriol spat at me.
Jerry doesn't care what anyone thinks about him, so that's a different breed of human.
Another one of one, right?
Yeah, he is a one of one. But what's funny about that, like, I guess I can tell you this story. So I, one time being at the castle, I was sitting down with Harbaugh, Scott Garceau. We were at a table having lunch, and he told this great story about him and his brother playing Little League Baseball. And the only reason I bring it up is because they're both so competitive.
Right.
And the way the story goes, there was a girl on the boys team that they were playing and Jim was pitching. And I don't think Jim was a fan of her playing against them. And he wasn't definitely going to take it easy on anyone. So he hits her. And then he gets thrown out of the game, and then he yells, "She was crowding the plate. What do you want me to do?" I think he got in a fight with the girl's brother or whatever, but he was so competitive. It didn't matter who he was going up against. He wants to win. And I think they're both very similar in that way.
I think it's Glenn Clark who told this story about the two of them, but Jim Harbaugh apparently was visiting John Harbaugh's house for some reason. And they had a family gathering. They're completely competitive. And apparently there's a whole bunch of games at Harbaugh's house. Things you could do outside, inside, maybe they're playing pool, maybe the other. And this was sometime around 2013, 2014 that this visit occurred. And they'd played all these games. And Jim turned to John and said, "Have you won anything yet?" And you think about the nature of that question. Yeah, I seem to remember a game January 2 years ago.
I'll just hang on to that one.
Last win. Let's talk about that for a second.
That's so good, man. But again, like the whole point of this is when it comes down to it, you can't complain about everything that goes wrong and not give credit when things go right. And that's how I try to be with Harbaugh when it comes down to it. I still have issues with clock management, but if you watch the league, there are so many coaches that have issues with that. And I don't know how.
Yeah. This is again, you know, the couple of plays they went down in bounds were bad. I do kind of blame both of them on the players. Unfortunately, Harbaugh talked immediately to Hopkins after the play about it. Hopkins hit his head. You know, he knew he'd done something wrong. Mitchell, I don't think he knew quite as significantly that he'd done something wrong. He probably needed a little more talking to. He was in his feeling his oats right then. Yeah. but then you the other play we talked about on the radio this morning where they sauntered on the defensive change, and you know, killed off about 10 of the, you know, at that time 300 seconds or so that were left in the game by making a change because the officials had to allow it.
It's brilliant gamesmanship when it comes down to that stuff. And I think I told you about Nikola Jokic in the NBA, that he's got to tie his shoes all the time. Like the clock's running. He makes sure that he's sauntering over to pick up the ball while the clock's running. He's just so on top of everything. And I think Harbaugh's kind of the same way about knowing those things. And but it's just, look, I hope this season ends up panning out for that good side of things. And we have a chance to talk about, hey, remember when that happened?
Yeah. It could be one of those things. It certainly has the reverso kind of a possibility to it that, you know, everybody's sure the guy's gone and he lasts another year. And 2015 has been 10 years, but, you know, we saw Bisciotti at the podium after the season saying, you know, did I think about it in terms of firing John? Yeah, I thought about it, but I wasn't inclined to do so.
Yeah.
And so I think
it's nice to have a boss like that, man, because like you're going to have down seasons. Bill Cowher doesn't win a Super Bowl if the Steelers aren't like that. They would have fired him before then.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So you got one more you want to talk about?
Yeah, because I want to get your take on what you've seen from Isaiah Likely since he's come back, because the things that stand out to me is he's had a couple penalties. Have you seen it? Because I don't want to grade him on being there without Lamar, but what are your thoughts on what you've seen from him?
So he's trying to do things as a blocker. So at least I'm happy about that. There's effort there going into that. So I don't think that's a problem. I'm not saying it's working out perfectly or anything, but there's effort there. Has not had great success in terms of his pass blocking, but I think that there's effort. In terms of as a receiver, he hasn't had one of the really big breakaway plays yet that we're hoping from Isaiah Likely. And Lamar will be back. Hopefully things will change. They gave Likely an offer before he got hurt. He's effectively ended somewhat of a, you know, cast himself as somewhat of a cautionary tale that you want to sign your contract early. Obviously that's true of our Darius Washington, not because they made a contract offer to Washington, but because he got injured right before his UFA season, you know, his contract year.
Do you think Likely is a franchise candidate if he doesn't sign that extension?
Yes, he would be, but it'll be hard for the Ravens to eat that because it'll really cut into their cap flexibility. They have Lamar's big contract. They have to find a way to get that. I think, you know, if I'm Eric DaCosta, I'm trying to think about how he would do this. I don't think Lamar would react well to threats, but I think I'd like to say, hey, look, Lamar, we've got to get your contract extended now. We have some key players we really want to keep, and you you know, getting your money spread out into future years or letting us account for it in future years is really all that it matters.
Yeah.
We'll put us in a position to sign players like Likely and Linderbaum and Travis Jones. And he may at that point say, I tell you what, sign Likely and Linderbaum.
That's what you're looking at, the things that need to happen with a restructure and what it allows you to do, especially for some of the free, with a team like the Ravens that draft so well, you're constantly going to want to be signing your own free agents.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of it. And the other thing you do is you have too many players. You can't sign them all. And you have to go through these heartbreaking decisions about who to cut and who to keep. And, you know, you're having to play players against each other to a certain degree because it's right player, right price. But the opposite side of that, being the Arizona Cardinals or one of these other teams that never has enough talent, you're always going to the market to looking for players. That's a hell of a lot worse position to be. That's a purgatory to be in.
Absolutely.
All right. I know we had at least one mailbag question. I hope you get your list of three MVPs ready because we'll talk about that in a second. But let me go to the mailbag, see if there's.
Are you talking about for the season so far? Or are you talking
Just for this game?
Okay.
For this game. Let's see. Yeah, we just got one question from Angelove 85, a very regular contributor. Appreciated, Angelove. With Ricard coming back and the run blocking looking better, should we trade for a guard? Also, let's answer that one first. Should we trade for a guard? So 11-4 is the trade deadline. It's coming up real soon.
There's a couple of, when you start looking at certain things, there's a couple of guys down in Miami. You have to start looking at the teams that you know are going to be sellers if you're going to trade for a player. I kept saying it's interesting playing Miami on Thursday and then having a few extra days ahead of the other teams to look at what you need and knowing that the trade deadline's coming up. But unless it's a swap with a team like you saw with the Chargers, which, hey, we need this, you need this, that's interesting. You're going to look at the teams that are going to want to be sellers and try to find something of value there. And even then, it's still sometimes hard to make trades in the NFL.
The Titans have traded a fair amount of the roster with it's easy math, by the way. If it's base salary divided by two is what you're going to save on a player the rest of the year. The Titans might want to save on Kevin Zeitler and trade him away, particularly if they can get anything in terms of draft capital. He's not having a terrible year. I actually don't think he's having any better year than Fa'alele, but he's still Kevin Zeitler, and you might want to hold on to him. I'll say this: you definitely would not, for the people who think this is even an option, you definitely would not want to trade Daniel Fa'alele to get Kevin Zeitler. And I hope I don't have to explain why to anybody.
Age is where you start, right?
The age, compensatory pick, everything. Yeah. The fact that Fa'alele hasn't really been any worse this year than Zeitler would be another reason. But, so
Ken, if they were going to make a trade, what do you think's the most important thing to? If they made one trade position wise, what's the most important?
So yeah, I think we'll probably hopefully get to this on the radio a little bit when we're right current on it. But I think they need a pass rusher. I think that would be number one, and maybe a defensive lineman would be the second choice. They just elevated Taven Bryan and Stat Aeneas Peebles for a game. That screams out a team that needs another defensive lineman to be up there. I think if there were a penetrating three tech, the guy who could really rush the passer there, I think that might be ideal. I don't know who might be available who fits that description, but right now the Ravens are playing a bunch of nose tackles up front, you know, two at a time. On a whole bunch of downs, and that's less than ideal in terms of getting some good pass rush.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of look at it, and if I was going to say where they need more help, it would be on the defensive side in one way or another than anything offensively. It doesn't mean you can't improve, like you talked about the offensive line or somewhere else, but anywhere along that D-line. Anybody up front in that rotation, I think, is going to be a good thing, especially with the injuries you've had.
Yeah. Let's go to the second part of Angelo's question. Also, regarding Lamar and practice status, was the league more concerned with betting or player health? It's a good question. I don't think that we've addressed that directly.
Yeah, and my thing is, I don't think the league's ever cared about player health. So, you know, if we want to be honest about it, but I think this is more about gambling and competitive balance in the league with what you're doing. They don't want people circumnavigating the injury report to try to get away with certain things. And anybody, I think, would be naive to think it doesn't have, even before they were in bed with gambling, they were in bed with gambling and they didn't know it. Mm-hmm. Cause it's just something that goes hand in hand. And this isn't me telling you that if gambling went away, that everyone would stop watching football, but it would suffer to some capacity.
Yeah, and that's the way to put it is they're in bed with gambling to the end that if the credibility of the game was low, they lose audience that enjoys gambling on football.
Yes.
So it's very well put, I think. And I look back to other situations that definitely have not been dealt with as seriously. But do you remember, like, probably 15 or 20 years ago by now, but Bill Belichick got some sort of a fine for not reporting injuries correctly. And it was just a fine. It wasn't a draft pick or anything like that. And then the next week, he put the entire roster as questionable.
Yeah. That's Bill.
If that was allowed and there's no serious repercussions from that, then I don't think you could do anything on this Lamar Jackson situation. They'll probably look at it. They'll tell him not to do it again. Hopefully it'll be, a dollar fine that is outside of the cap and doesn't affect it in any way. And then, we move on.
What do they say in NASCAR? If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, right? Yeah, Rubbing's racing.
trading pain. All right. So let's talk MVPs for this game. We've had a little while. Give us your number three MVP in this game.
Offense only, or am I going?
Offense only.
Okay. I wrote them both ways just in case. I just want to make sure. My number three would be Zay. I mean, you can't deny the impact that he has on a game. Lots of plays there that you're looking at in the open field because he's a guy that you get in space, what he does to help others get open. He had a good game. I would say Zay would be my number three.
Okay, that's an excellent choice. He's on my honorable mention list that I just wrote down. But Rashad Bateman will also be in that honorable mention list. Good, nice to see him break out again. Derrick Henry had a gutsy game, not a big yards per carry game, but he carried the rock a number of times in a game where people knew he was going to get the football, to use an old saying. But my number three guy is Keaton Mitchell, and part of it is for what he did in this game. And part of it is for what this means for the Ravens season. I think he can't be any lower than number three because of that.
Yeah, and you're not going to see any offensive linemen on my list. I totally disregard them in every facet. That's okay, why.
Fair enough.
I'm just saying that was me joking about it, but it's how they never get any love from anybody. I'm just looking at the list going, yeah, it's pretty basic for me. I got Derrick Henry as my number two.
Okay.
You mentioned all those reasons. He had a couple of really nice, tough runs there. I still have to look at him and where he's getting hit according to the line of scrimmage at times. But I think when Lamar comes back, I was so excited to watch Lamar, Keaton, Pat Ricard, and Derrick Henry all in some capacity of that backfield. And then it was like a huge blow on Saturday morning when you wake up to the news. But I thought all along Derrick Henry was going to come in and have a good game. And as you said, yards per carry, not quite what he wants, but he punched it in twice.
Yeah. He'll get to play with Henry some more, and he'll get to play with Lamar, more importantly. And maybe he'll get to play with Mitchell as well. My number two guy is Tyler Linderbaum. Probably was the most outstanding performance of the offensive lineman. Rosengarten was close. But Linderbaum, I thought, recovering from a really bad pass-blocking season to date is far more important to the Ravens. So he's my number two guy.
I believe we're both going to have the same number one, so I don't know.
Just possible. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if we just talked about is this the greatest backup quarterback performance in Ravens history, how do you not put the guy number one? He didn't turn the ball over. You add in 50-plus yards rushing and, some key drives on third down. Tyler Huntley had a really, really good game, and I think it's a disservice just to call him a game manager because I think he made some plays in that game as well.
Yeah, they didn't dummy down the playbook as much as they could have, and yet they still schemed the ball out of his hands quickly enough on some plays. Even some of the deeper throws were made fairly quickly. I'm thinking about the back shoulder to Hopkins, for example, being a throw that he got out of his hands fairly quickly. And they went after the Bears' weakness, which with their backup cornerbacks being in that game was exactly what they needed to do, and they made good use of what they had. And Tyler will remember this game, and this will be the one he'll tell his grandkids about, assuming he never makes it big as a starter in the league, which, time is certainly running out for that. But this is a game he could have turned the season around for a potential playoff contender.
Yeah. Again, if the story gets written that they make this playoff run and we let the chips fall where they may in the postseason, you come back to this point and you go, what a huge win that was to really actually give yourself an opportunity. Because, like, if I'm looking at the Ravens season, I call them break points, but you can call them losses if you want. I think they got a couple of breaks in there, maybe one more loss, two, and then you're asking for some help. But realistically, picking up that win, I don't think people realize how huge it was.
Yeah, it definitely, the gamblers seem to realize how huge it was. Fair. Are you a heavy play either way on the Ravens to win the division or the Ravens to not win it? Because I mean, you can do that synthetically by just betting the other three teams at the appropriate price.
If you ask me who I would bet on, I would say the Ravens. The only reason I'm telling you I'm not going to do it is we have seen so many injuries this year. And I think the one caveat to everybody talking about making this run is that they now have to stay healthy. And it's something that they haven't done all season. And maybe that's not fair. We just saw that with the Orioles. Hell, Washington's going through it now. I think there's so many things that can go wrong. But I think the other three teams in this division aren't good at all.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. And the Ravens, the notion that the Ravens are healthy kind of bothers me because they don't have Ardarius Washington. They don't have Tavius Robinson and they don't have Nnamdi Madubuike. Those are three critical defensive players. They're still missing. And so they're really not healthy, even though everybody is, you know, full practice now who happens to be on the roster at this exact moment. They do still have a few possible returns with Robinson, Washington and Adisa Isaac potentially coming back, but they still got a lot of money and a lot of really great players sidelined for this year. I want to toss in one more reason why I don't think it's a good idea to make a futures bet on the Ravens right now. The Trump tax law in 26 has 90% of your winnings, 100% of your winnings are reportable, 90% of your losses are deductible, which means if you're taxed at a 30% marginal rate, you have to win 1.5% more of the time to make that an even money play. So instead of the famous 52.38%, 11/21st, you have to win 53.88% now with Trump's tax law if you're taxed at that level. So I've had a podcast already on this I did earlier this year. And I don't want to step on gambling things you're doing, Jeremy, because I
love hearing you talk about this. You throw it around the numbers. I'm sure somebody's going, the 0.3, what does that mean? But yeah, like the math is mathing, so it makes sense. Trust me.
All right. Well, Jeremy, always great to have you on. Tell folks where they can find your material, read you, maybe meet you in person. Are you doing any public appearances coming up?
No, soon? I did lose a bet to a listener, and I'm taking him out to lunch. I think we're going to go watch a game together. So I am. You will see me walking around the streets of Glen Burnie. I don't mean that in a weird way, but I'm running into more and more people that start to recognize you. And if my beard's longer, sometimes they tip me. So I'm not homeless. I just look like it. But what are you going to do? I'm doing a couple of different things. Obviously, the morning show. I have my own website, ConcreteLocks.com. I also have a company, Pick Dogs, that I've been working for. It's PickDogs.com with a Z. And it's D-A-W-G-Z. Yeah, so dogs. But we have a YouTube channel. I'm on there. You'll see my face plastered all over the place because I do a daily podcast for him called The Lowdown. And I jump on a bunch of other ones. And you can see me with Mark Zeno doing a college football and an NFL podcast where we break down five games and then give out a free play that we both agree on at the end of the show.
Yes, that's a good way. And as always, on the morning show on 105.7, outstanding work. And the three of you guys, I love working with you when I have the chance. My 30 minutes a week that I get to spend with you guys is always fun coming into there and talking a little football.
And it's funny because one of my favorite things to do is to make people around me uncomfortable. And I love seeing if I can get a jolt out of Ken for something I said, like, what? The head turn or a laugh? But we love having you in studio, man. It's one of our favorite parts of the week is to talk Ravens with you.
All right. Much appreciated, my friend. Other folks out there, thanks for listening as always. Please make use of hashtag film study mailbag for questions, whether you want them on the offensive defensive pod. A lot of people want them on Friday morning GM. We hope Friday morning GM isn't going to be the kind of draw for pointed negative questions that it's been. But frankly, the questions have been great on that as well. And we've really enjoyed doing that show. Thanks for listening. Jeremy, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Anytime, man.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
You can have it all. Great pay, awesome benefits, a flexible schedule, the chance to grow. At Cox, we're recruiting auto and diesel technicians to join our Manheim and Fleet Services teams. If you're ready for a new job and want to experience an award-winning workplace Drive your career forward with us. Visit cox.career/autotech to learn more. That's cox.career/autotech.